RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice and Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Josh, this week, if the darkness inside us is greater than the light, then there's nothing we can do for the listeners. So I need you to really be positive.
Okay. Okay.
Positively
I'm all right.
Light.
I will do that for you. Yes. Okay. Anything you want to more.
It took me a while to figure out what she was saying. I'm like, what more what? Oh, a more. Got it. Yeah. I guess it was Spanish.
Yes, it was magic Spanish. That's what it was.
Magic Spanish. That's different than Castilian or modern.
Just slightly. So a few incantations mixed in here and there.
Got it. So we had another episode of Arrow this week.
Yes, we did. Do you notice the lighthearted tone of my voice when I said that? Yes, we did.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say that you are trying to be light. You know what? Maybe I'll go a little dark. You stay a little light, and we'll kind of meet in the middle here.
All right. Well, we can try. I do have a little bit of darkness floating around inside me. It's mostly just resentment, I think.
Okay.
You know, so I'm hanging out at Hub City. Okay, just catching up on some emails.
Okay,
right? I'm checking my MySpace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's changed there for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I'm just walking around this casino with my computer, just looking at it.
Uh huh.
And all of a sudden, there's just some lady in a black dress and this weird, I don't know, smoky stuff coming out of her hand.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she just had some dust or if she was smoking or something. I couldn't tell.
Maybe she was a chimney sweep.
Well, that was my first thought, right? And
right.
I started looking up chimney sweeps on the computer. All of a sudden, my computer just dies.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the darkness enveloped it.
Oh.
And there apparently wasn't enough light in my computer because now it is gone. So
it was running Windows 10.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Can you believe that? I know. I thought it'd be reliable. But you know what? That is why if I sound a little bit strange to you, it's not because I'm in the deepest depths of the high roller room in the casino.
Oh, I just, no, of course not. I just thought
I'm
you had a Nexus.
I'm having to use alternative audio sources this week.
Got
so,
it.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm hoping to have something restored from that computer. I'd send it to John Constantine. I just put it in a little.
But I put it in a money, right? So.
He does. Yeah. This will make us even if he can get everything off it, because it's got a lot of important stuff I need, including every Arrow brief that I have ever written is on that computer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I know. That's how I felt.
Plus those nuclear launch codes, which would be nice to get back as well. I can understand.
That's not bad, is it?
Well, since nobody can access it right now, it's fine.
Okay, yeah. I didn't have backup to that. So
yeah. Oh, gosh. I was also going to tell you, I mean, because I had a Nexus here
yes.
at my house for a while, but I traded it in for a Mercedes.
Oh, well, hey, you know.
You know, I felt it was an upgrade.
So. I think so, yeah. You got something reliable still.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
well, regardless, I'll do my best to sound clear to everybody, and my apologies for the problems and issues. Hopefully next week we'll get that taken care of.
Well, you know, I think it's very apropos because as much with the episode that we are about to discuss, you know, we found out that, you know, God had to wipe out the world to start over again. So maybe this is a rebirth, a what's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here, bud.
Besides rebirth?
Yeah. What's the...
Maybe you're thinking of a newbie, brand new and improved, maybe just a Genesis.
That's it. Genesis. That is it. Yes, exactly.
Right. I saw that movie of Star Trek. That was a good one.
I think this is – no, I think this one really refers to more biblical aspects of Genesis.
Okay. I didn't realize they had Star Trek in the Bible. That's interesting. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll have to check that out.
It was with Charlton Heston from like the 60s. It came out a while ago. Anyway.
Take us to light speed. All right. Well, let's talk about this episode of Arrow. This is Arrow. Okay. Let's get back on Arrow track here. Episode 20 from season 4, Genesis, which aired May the 4th.
May the 4th be with you too.
Yes, and with your spirit. It was written by Oscar Valderrama and Emilio Ortega Aldrich.
Excellent.
Directed by Gregory Smith. All right, well, let me tell you a little bit about this.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, guess who went to Hive today? That wild-eyed magician that had been away? The Dark is back in town. Dark is back. The Dark is back. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, after killing all the ones that left him to rot in prison. Damien Dark takes control of Hive. Wasn't too hard either. That was
Kind of retakes easy. Control there. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the guy's backup plan that he was saying exactly?
I think his contingency was to shoot him. That was.
I've got a gun. I'll just shoot him. No problem. Right. That works out fine. Well, anyway, after killing the ones that betrayed him there, he takes control. And of course he takes control of their pet project Genesis. Now, Oliver, he faces the dark truth. The Dark's magic is just too powerful. So he gets on LinkedIn and meets some of John Constantine's connections. And he learns how to defeat.
I want to see that.
He learns how to defeat a little dark magic, right? Now, since David Copperfield and Doug Henning weren't available, he and Felicity go to Hub City to meet the girl in the dark dress, Ezrin Fortuna. Now, she is a sorceress that will try to show Oliver a way to defeat Dark. Unfortunately, he may be too dark himself to stop Damien.
Without the H. Now, got it.
That's right. Right. Now, while Oliver and Felicity peruse the darker corners of the Hub City Casino, Diggle chases his brother through a dark alley, only to get cornered and trapped. Now, Andy says he'll hand over his brother to Dark, but really it's a dark plan to get Lila, who remains in hiding and also carries the Rubicon. Now, that's not a six-sided puzzle from the 80s. This is a device that's powerful enough to control the world's nuclear weapons, sending us all into a dark apocalypse, which also sounds like the plot of an 80s movie, but that's okay.
Right.
Thea decides to take a breather at a little bed and breakfast with Alex. She seems to be having a relaxing time until she realizes that stupid dog won't shut up, and it never gets dark. Now she's trapped, and the team is going to have limited time to track down Dark. That's the witty megalomaniac, not the adjective. Before he destroys, wait for it, the world.
I just was waiting for that part. He's pretty much done everything except for twirl his mustache and laugh maniacally.
Okay, now I just want him to do that.
I mean, he doesn't technically have – he could twirl his eyebrow, I guess, or something like that. So
he could do the little pinky up to the mouth thing that, you know, Dr. Evil.
$1 million. All right. Interesting piece of news I saw just the other day. And I don't know. You hear all sorts of really just – horrible stuff that comes out of Hollywood, you know, just the rumor and gossip mill and stuff like this. And just,
right.
You hear bad things about actors that you might enjoy their work. And then you hear stuff about them and that kind of changes the way you think about them as people. And so there was a piece that, I saw it was from Entertainment Weekly originally. I was reading it through Comic Book Resources and, it explained, in his own words, Colton Haynes explained why he left acting and it, for his career. He said basically he stepped away because he cared more about his mental and physical health than his career. He says, I've had terminal anxiety my entire life, physically ill, fainting. I'm 27 years old and I have an ulcer. I had to step back. And this comes from a number of issues that he had, but also because he was he had recently come out as being gay. And I think part of that was not having come out of the closet to the industry and to, you know, the public. Not that that's necessary, but there was a lot of stuff going on behind his back. And, you know, I can imagine how much it could stress a young actor out worrying about, you know, if I reveal my sexuality, you know, there are a lot of people that don't agree with that kind of stuff, and I could get blackballed or, you know, not cast in the roles that I want to get.
Or, hey, even just social media
sure.
kickback, you know, that's just brutal.
And you said something really nice to me. I mean, because I read this and I was like, man, it's nice to hear him be able to talk about this and just have some more confidence about that. And then you said something really nice about that, about after when you read this.
Yeah. I mean, I really just wanted to go up to him and go, can I give you a hug? I really just felt bad for the guy. Cause I mean, you know, it is acceptable in most Hollywood circles, but you can tell that this is a pretty deep problem that he's had for his entire life. You know, I mean the panic attacks and things like that. And that's very serious stuff. I can vouch for that for sure. But, I honestly didn't straight out come out to the public as being gay until basically this interview. It was always kind of hinted at. And he said, well, am I or am I not? You know, it was very vague.
Yeah.
But in this, I think it's pretty much verified. And he opened up, and I hope, because he's, you know, everything I've seen him in, which is, of course, you know, just public eye kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He always seems like a real kind-hearted and stable, confident soul. But,
very positive,
you know,
kind of person, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's just, you know, that there's more deep down in there. And that's true for a lot of people, you know, not just famous people, but everyday people too. And
sure.
And so I just really sympathize for him, and I hope this helps him a lot. I really hope that it helps him kind of feel more stable and confident in himself.
And just him talking about it, you know, maybe it'll make some other people realize that, you know, maybe they have an issue as well, and encourage them to seek some treatment, because, you know, he's so public about this as well. You know, so
congratulations to Colton.
Yeah. Good
Thank
on you.
You.
And, maybe, you know, maybe at some point we'll be able to see Roy back again. Who knows?
I would love that. I would love, and you know what? I think he would too. And he even said so much that he really enjoyed working on that, and this was more for his health.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, all right. Well, let's get on talking a little bit about Genesis. So we've talked about what we don't know about Genesis for the better part of the season here. I think we had gotten little teases here or there, but nothing, you know, nothing concrete enough. We knew that they were growing some corn down somewhere potentially underground, changing some air and, you know, doing some other stuff like that. So we finally, I think, know what Genesis is, and in terms of the show. So what did you come away from this episode knowing that the bad guys wanted to do this May?
Okay.
Because again, if it's May, Star City is in dire straits.
That is true. That is true. Also an 80s band. So listen, this is what I think. And they've kind of hinted at what he wants, but not how he's going to go about doing it. But he, Damien Darhk and apparently Hive, and I think even the League of Assassins have talked about this kind of stuff, at least in some versions of it. Mm-hmm. That when something is bad enough, they want to have a rebirth or a genesis and start over, start fresh. But in order to do that, you have to wipe out the old. You have to destroy the old. So Darhk wants to, and Hive wants to destroy everything and then rebuild with this Genesis project, which is apparently a dome of sanctuary, which I'm guessing will just hold the people that he wants to stick around.
Right.
I don't know what the plans for the rest of the world are after it's burned. But.
Right. I would assume that if Hive is some kind of global organization, because we do see the people on the monitors, and we know there, you know, we know there are other heads of Hive, I guess,
right,
to use it that way. There may be these arcs. I think that's kind of what it was referred to at the end of the episode, potentially in other locations around the globe. But this one is here for the Star City, you know, for whatever the Americas or this, you know, section of the United States or whatever it is.
Well, and we got some hint as to why it might be there in particular as well, late, that we can talk about too.
Possibly. Right, right. I don't know if that necessarily was why the Ark was there. I think that was why Dark was there.
But yeah, right, exactly.
Right. So, okay, so they've built these underground bunkers, basically, right?
Uh-huh.
So why did they build these? What did we
well,
get?
so they can go in there while they wipe out the rest of the world with these nuclear weapons that he can now control because of Rubicon.
Rubicon, which we saw back, I think it was like 10th or 11th episode of this season, AWOL. It was the one where Amanda Waller died. She was protecting Rubicon from Shadow Spire at the time, which was a splinter group of of Hive, I guess.
I can't remember. That's been so long ago, I hadn't thought about it. But something like that.
So, okay, so nuclear annihilation. Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
that sounds good.
And it's not
sounds
just,
like a plan.
Well, the thing is that what I found is funny is, well, not funny, but I mean, I, you know, obviously I believe this is kind of done on purpose to show you, you know, to show you the growth of the villains. But in season one, Malcolm and his group wanted to, you know, do the undertaking, which was pretty much just destroy a very large section of Star City, the Glades, and then rebuild that. But, you know, Hive, you know, think globally, act locally. They they've taken it to a new level, and apparently they are going to cause worldwide disaster because you know, they've got these nuclear launch codes now and can pretty much do anything. Something's been not bothering me, but I've just been trying to remember. Isn't there some other movie or TV show where there's an evil organization that is planning to, and I'm not trying to set you up for a bit. I really cannot recall this, but that set up like some sort of fail-safe houses for their members to hide in while they destroy other stuff around the world. It feels vaguely familiar.
Moonraker from James Bond.
You know, or what? It might be Moonraker that I'm thinking about. The fact that they were taking like the Aryan type people and putting them up in space, and then they were going to wipe out the world, right? Or the
right.
the population. No,
that's one. I'm sure there's been others as
well.
That's
probably what I was thinking of, because I am a big James Bond fan as well. But yeah, I just, you know, it's. There have been storylines like this. I don't feel that Arrow is really covering any new ground. I mean, obviously new ground for them, but you know, they're going through a lot of similar storylines and, you know, evil things that happen to other, you know, heroes and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But while we're talking about the Ark and Genesis's plan and all that kind of stuff, I did want to talk a little bit about Thea at this point, because, you know, we saw her in this little peaceful suburb, apparently, which I think is kind of like a Disneyland for supervillains with the way that she described the sounds repeating. If you for those that go to the Disney parks, they actually pump in like sound effects and music in different areas. So if you're by the Matterhorn, you get sounds from, you know, the Alps and Alpine music and stuff like this. But if you go over into, you know, Toontown, there's other sounds and it's all.
Oh, it gets way detailed. You go on Main Street, you can hear sound coming from behind the windows.
Yeah.
And they even pump in smells.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
So yeah, I agree with you. It's a Legion of Doom Disneyland. That's good.
Yeah. But my concern with this, so, okay, first off, I think we kind of guessed it. Creepy political guy is creepy, right? Would you agree?
I would agree, although I almost feel like he was being manipulated. And he had those little, vitamin Ruvé. Is that a vitamin?
I was looking to see if it was like Ruvé brand vitamins or Dark brand vitamins. It was some, you know, like wellness vitamins. It was just some kind of generic label on there. It wasn't anything like an in-joke that I could tell.
So, oh, that's good. Yeah. That would have been a little too obvious, I think. But
yeah.
Like a picture of Damien on the cover, like thumbs up or something like that. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know if he was being manipulated or if he was kind of voluntarily doing that. And the reason I think that is because I go back to where he sort of originated, right? Yeah. He originated as Oliver's campaign manager.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that Damien or Hive would have necessarily set him up as that long ago before knowing what they know now. Could have, because Oliver was running for mayor.
Yeah, I mean, and we were thinking about, there was weird stuff going on with him. Like, there were just, every time he was in a scene, it was just something off about him. And maybe it's just because the guy's not a great actor. I don't think it's that. I mean, I don't think he's horrible. I mean, I assume he's doing what he's been told to do, and just, you know, there's always something that was off about it. But you're right. He, as Oliver's campaign manager,
they may have stuck him in there as a
mole,
not a spy. Yeah, a mole, right? Just to have him in the mayor's office, right?
Yeah, there's nothing that we know that, like, he tanked, you know, purposefully for them, but
didn't seem to be. But even in this one, he almost seemed, I mean, even when Thea was clearly figuring out what was going on, he didn't seem, you know, perplexed by that. He's just kind of going with it.
Right. I think that was the yellow pills he was taking, which are those ones that Dark was feeding to his followers earlier in the season to make them more compliant, that also might change your DNA or something like that. There's still a lot of questions about what is all that, you know, and it was never really explained too well.
They referred way back to that episode, which when he was first giving that to his followers, which was, man, maybe the second or third episode, I think.
Yeah.
And previously. So that was clearly important. They wanted to remind us all of that. So
yeah. Well, I'm glad they did, because it does go many weeks without picking up on certain plot threads. So, you know, we forget about certain things that, you know, they think are really important and they're probably thinking about all the time, and they just don't show it. So obviously we don't realize how important it might be. Mm-hmm. But my issue is, I mean, Thea seemed kind of freaked out, but like, she's like, why don't I remember us driving here? Did you drug me? I'm just kind of shocked that her level of unbelievability, incredulousness, whatever, wasn't higher, you know. And then she kind of just goes crazy running around town, and, you know, I mean, it's almost like he's trying to gaslight her, you know, just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's 8 o'clock and it's light out. We're further north. I was like, if that means anything,
it would be darker, wouldn't it? It would be darker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. So,
but hey, yeah, I agree with that too. I thought that was a little off for Thea. Now, not so much that she was trying to get out of there, because I felt like she was just trying to get out of the town wherever she was, or try to find something that she hadn't seen yet.
Right.
But it actually bothered me that she was so worried. I mean, this is Thea Queen. This is Speedy. She's been trained by Malcolm Merlyn, and she's a fighter. You know, if she did come across something, even walking around in her skimpy little jammies, she could probably take him out.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why she was so worried. That kind of bothered me, threw me off a little bit. But, you know, I mean, she had been drugged, so apparently.
Potentially. I mean, right. I don't know.
So it was a little off. That was, I think, the weakest part of this entire episode. It didn't bother me. I still thought it was good and it was important, and it really showed us a lot of the Genesis plans. But I think overall, just the way it was presented was probably the weakest part.
Yeah, yeah. Weakest part for me? Yeah, I mean, that was – it's up there. I think actually there's some stuff with Lila that I would even move up.
Really?
A little bit above that. Yeah, I'm going to get to her in a little bit. But to get to her, we need to go through John Diggle.
No way, man. No, you can do that. I ain't going through John Diggle.
Well, you know what? It's pretty easy, because everybody goes through John Diggle in this episode. I understand why they wanted, and maybe you can help me out on this, just in understanding, like, your take on it. But my take is that I understood what the writers and the producers wanted to do with John. They needed to kind of complete out a couple of arcs for him. One is the grief and the anger that he feels over Laurel's death, the blame that he places on himself, and also the elements of his relationship with his brother, which they're all tied up in this anger, anxiety, blame, guilt thing, cocktail thing that he's got going for himself. So
good way to describe it.
Yeah. So he, you know, chases his brother numerous times in this episode. Like I think I counted, I think it was like four or five chases. As a trained military man, from what I understand, when you pull your gun, you should be prepared to use it. And John pulled his gun at least four times on his brother. He only used it once, unfortunately. And he wasn't aware of the traps that were being set for him. I mean, Lila pointed this out to him that he was too close. And he's like, I don't care. You know, I'm probably right, but it doesn't matter if I'm, you know, blinded by my passion or my anger or something like that. He still went into this in not a healthy mindset. And it's not that I had a problem with the way it was. That part was written because I thought John working through his grief was there were some good elements to that. And the discussions that he had with his brother, it's just that they were broken up with chase and then escape and then recapture. And then, John gets captured and then he escapes, but his brother tracked him. And then they have another chase and then, you know, draw a gun again and then another chase and then draw the gun again. It just, there was too much like busy work to get around it. I don't feel they had a good, what do they call it in storytelling? Like a backbone for that. They had some moments that they wanted to tell, but I didn't feel that they were strung together very well.
I guess I didn't notice that. I actually kind of felt okay. Matter of fact, I was liking the relationship among John and Lila in this one because they kind of went back and forth. Like you said, John was working through his grief, right? But Lila was there for him in a strong way, maybe stronger as a wife, as Lila, as his wife, than I've seen a few times in this season. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she seemed a little weaker than I would have expected for who she is. Sometimes just they were kind of on even ground, but this time she was getting up in his face, telling him what not to do. And you know, you get out of there. I mean, he wasn't listening to her, but she was standing up to him and trying to, get him to stop, you know, and he was just too blinded by that rage. So, I don't know. I guess I felt a little bit different, but
some of my issues with her started when he's chasing Andy at the beginning of the episode and he's firing his gun around the corner as he's on the phone with her. And she's like, you know, hey, what's going on? Like, she doesn't notice the gunfire in the background. And, you know, she says, we can have, you know, back up there in 5 to 10 minutes. And he says, that's too long. The second time, you know, I thought there was a good scene when he came into the safe house, which at that point we didn't know was the tractor trailer. And they have a nice conversation. I thought that was nice. John, you know, they show that the baby's there too, which that's, I'm going to pin that up on the board. I want to get back to that in a second.
Okay. I'll let you
that, you know, she was like, oh, you know, and could you pick up some diapers? And I'm like, okay, you know, they had a nice little moment and she told him how concerned she was. And he appeared to listen and, you know, take that into advisement. It's like, okay, I'm going to go get some diapers. But then he comes back after being tortured. He escapes, manages to get back to her, wherever that is, because presumably she's mobile and roaming and people shouldn't be able to find her. Not that he can't because she's married to her. And probably has access, but he comes in. I mean, he's bloody. He's been stabbed. He's just like, he's a mess. And she just starts screaming at him. It's not like, oh my gosh, what happened to you? She just lays right into him as soon as he walks in the door that like, you know, that was unprofessional. You shouldn't have got in there. You weren't prepared for this. And then, you know, John had the tracker on him and stuff. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like, didn't we learn anything from the Millennium Falcon? You know, obviously they let him escape.
But you know, he's a soldier, and she, I think that was okay. I see what you're saying though. I get it. If my wife did that, I'd be like, man, I just got kidnapped by my brother and beat up really bad. Come on, give me a break. I need a back rub or something. Yeah. But yeah, I see what you're saying. But see, I think that's what their relationship is. It's always been like that because they were soldiers. They were tough fighters. You know, this isn't just Lucy and
right.
Oh, whoever Lucy was married to. I couldn't think of a good couple. Sorry, Ricky. Yeah, that's me.
I mean, as Andy pointed out, it was a war. John just didn't know it was a war, and I can see that. Let me just get my last gripe about this.
Okay, you go for it. And by the way, these gripes are perfectly legitimate. I have no problem with them, and I can see how you took it like that. I just didn't notice it at the time. So.
Sure. And that's fine. I mean, if you can overlook some of this stuff, more power to you. I think that's great. But my other big gripe is just, again, I felt last week had really strong writing because we focused on the characters, and this week they were trying to do more plot based stuff, and it was just, there were just loose ends and stupid junk everywhere. I don't want to say junk, but I'm saying junk. So we've got the head of Argus who admits freely that she is not Amanda Waller. Well, no kidding, because would Amanda Waller be driving around the city that is under siege by this villain in a truck that, you know, supposedly is safe, but she's got her baby in there with her, and she puts the secret plans in her body? I mean, like, really, is that the best plan that you've got for keeping everything and everybody safe?
Okay.
That's so pretty piss poor.
Do you want my evaluation of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's just please.
From my point of view. Okay, so I agree. It's all kind of right there. You know, it's the same reason why the president and vice president don't travel together, right?
You
don't
yes, want them exactly.
But I will say for this, now, number one, the truck was heavily fortified and actually they showed that when he shot the missile. And nothing could stop it until Dark got there.
Right. And that's cool. I mean, and yeah.
Yeah, totally cool. So, and it moves around. So you don't know where it's going to be. You know, it's never in one spot. And you cannot find it. Now, John had a way to find it, and he maybe
nobody can find it. Wait, John had a way to find it.
Well, they had given him the capacity to find it, but Hive couldn't even find it. Damian Dark couldn't even find it without John. Until John screwed up, he couldn't find it. So that's a pretty safe place. And if your baby was in danger, where do you want them? In the safest possible place you can think of. Well, let's keep them moving around. Let's put them in this heavily fortified, movable bunker. And that's about as safe, because you put them in the apartment, or even, which they sent him with Donna at the end. I'm like, really? Okay. From the most safe place to the absolute least safe place, second only to the back of John Diggle on a speeding motorcycle. But
no, sir. The exact worst place for the baby would be in the Arrow cave. Because the bad guys just waltz in there all the time.
or Star Labs, but that's a different
thing. Or Star Labs, right, over on the Flash. That's true.
So I mean, in their defense, that really truly was the safest place until John blew it. So
okay, right.
I mean, again, you can see different points of view, and I totally see what you're saying. You're right. She should not have had the thing on. That should have been a ruse, you know? Yeah. Obviously, Dark knew that she had the... Yeah. The Rubicon in her little forearm there. Right. But you don't – your forearm, really? Not your – you know, like your left buttock or anything, or I mean somewhere that's not obvious. Well, I don't know, whatever.
I was going to say they couldn't show that scar on network TV if it was on
– Oh, yeah, I suppose. Where they go, where were you keeping Rubicon? Hold on. I'll show you.
that's very cheeky.
What's she doing? but – anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm not trying to defend them, but that's how it played out in my mind.
Okay. So let me, I will say one good thing about Lila. I did like that she knows her limitations at least.
Yeah.
We knew how tough Amanda Waller was, and we also knew when Lila took the job, she knew she had big shoes to fill, so to speak. And she knows her limitations. She says to John, if they capture me, I'm going to roll right over on you. So you got to get out of here. I can't know anything about it, you know, which at least she's honest. She knows her limitations, you know? So
yeah, I do have a question about that.
Yeah.
Why didn't he just put her on the motorcycle with him too? But I mean, I do understand that. Plus they would chase after him, which I mean, they did anyway, but Dark would chase after them and that puts John and Sarah in danger. So I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about, since we're talking about John, let's talk about kind of the meat of his storyline. And like I said, I thought there were some good scenes with Andy. Eugene Burr did a great job of just being that kind of, like, he's like that woodpecker that's outside just knocking on your house 24 hours a day. I mean, he's just going to drive me nuts until I have to put a bullet in his head, or in his wherever he got shot. Andy compared Dark to Jesus, which I thought was, that just kind of blew me away. I'm like, whoa, this, you know, he is drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, with extra vitamins here, because this is absolutely insane. But did Andy really force John's hand in this matter? Does John need to share some of the blame for shooting his brother?
Oh, that's a hard question. I mean,
it is kind of a loaded question. No, and seriously, no pun intended on that one. But it is. Because he's kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, right?
Of course,
It was
100%.
Wait! I got it. It's a Kobayashi Maru, right?
Oh yes, John Genesis.
Dino. Yeah, going back to the whole Star Trek thing. So, because if he doesn't, if we think about this, right? If John doesn't kill Andy, and like Andy says, just puts him away, he'll get out again, or Dark will get out again. And then his family's not safe. Leave that behind the fact that Dark has got this plan to actually bring nuclear Armageddon to the planet. Maybe Andy's not completely aware of all of those plans. But, you know, John obviously couldn't feel safe with that. And then, you know, if John decides to kill him, well, then, you know, that's got to be something that's on his conscience. So,
yes. I have pretty strong feelings about this, and it might be a philosophical difference than some people. But as far as his, you know, Diggle and his brother are concerned, I don't know that John needs to feel that guilt. He's going to anyway, of course, because he didn't want to do it.
Okay.
But I mean, to me, it's almost like Andy was dead quite a while ago. As far as his
both
brother
literally
goes.
And figuratively, so
yeah,
really, I mean, potentially, actually, we don't know if he really, really was dead or if he was just like dead on paper.
Right. But either way, just as his brother and who John remembered him being, he was dead, and it was very obvious from this one that he wasn't coming back. Unfortunately, it went way too far. For John to realize it. I mean, some people would have probably realized it a lot more. So
yeah,
it was a necessary evil. Yeah, I know it was his brother, but it really wasn't his brother. So, I mean, it's really hard. Like you said, he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
Right.
Hard question. I feel as if John does not need to shoulder the blame.
Well, he was only one illegitimate child away from being Oliver Queen last week, so I'm wondering. I'm concerned for the character's, you know, the kind of salvation for him, because I feel like Oliver's kind of turned a corner in the show, being able to deal with this a little bit better, and maybe Oliver will use this opportunity to, you know, help John work through the grief, because there's a lot of darkness in John's soul right now. And that seems to be kind of the theme that they want to talk about here for the end of the season, the balance of darkness and light within individuals, and, you know, making sure that you don't swing too far, probably in one direction or the other, or if you do, it's probably going to be all, you know, towards the light.
So is dark to you more of your tendencies to do bad things? I'll just call them bad things to be simple. Or does that also include like the grief and regret that you have? Are they both considered dark, or is it just your darker, more negative side?
I think it's probably just the more negative side, because with the scenes we saw of Oliver, there was obviously some level of grief, but I think, you know, like he sees, you know, we saw Ra's al Ghul stabbing him. We saw, Slade. Yeah. Slade stabbing his mother and, you know, Tommy dying and stuff like this. And if I recall correctly, I mean, Oliver, of course he was grieved by all of these things that happened to him, but the what they inspired in him was vengeance, you know, to be able to take up a cause and go, you know, hunt down this person and, you know, make amends for the pain. It wasn't any kind of righteous anger. Well, maybe it was righteous anger, but I think it's that they inspired him to revert to what he talks about as, you know, the kind of the feral nature of the character he was when he was on the island.
Yeah. Yeah. These are these really, really tough decisions that all of the team has been having to face more and more as the series progresses. We've talked a lot throughout this series about becoming a hero and tough choices you have to make, but it seems like the tough choices they're having to make, there's really no good solution as far as on a personal level, you know?
Yeah.
What it does to you as a person, it just turns you dark. I mean, I've actually called and canceled some interviews that I had to be a hero. I said, just tear up my resume. I'm not really in the mood anymore. I just don't really want to go there.
Oh, well, don't get all down on yourself, Joshy. So, I mean, life is a series of hard decisions. That's, you know, and hopefully none of us, you know, here or listening, anybody listening ever has to make, you know, these kind of life or death sort of decisions. But, you know, we all make little decisions every day that can affect other people's lives. Like I think John even continues to kind of compound the issue. You had an interesting note here about why did John decide to lie to Lila about what happened? And I kind of wanted to hear what your thoughts were about that.
Well, I'm my only thought is that he's just feeling the guilt so much of having to take his brother out. But I don't know. I don't know why he would do that. I mean, I don't think he has any kind of nefarious plan or anything like that. I don't think that's why he's telling her.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm not sure why he wouldn't open up to her. It seems like he has been completely honest and frank with her about everything we've ever seen him do in the show.
So this is the scene at the end where after he's killed his brother, he comes back and she asks what happened, and he starts to tear up and says that he had to kill his younger brother, his baby brother, which putting it that way just makes it sound horrendous. You know, he could have said, I had to kill my military trained brother who is under the sway of an evil mastermind or something like that. But now he has to say he killed his baby brother. But then she says, what happened? And he's like, he tried to take the gun from me, right? He, which was not the case, right? I mean, he was just, Andy just kept poking and poking and poking and poking until John just almost, it appeared by instinct, shot him. And I really don't know that it's guilt, though I think there could be definitely a component of guilt to it. I think it had to do with the fact that he really was just trying to protect Lila. And maybe, you know, basically he's shouldering all the burden himself, right? It's like, well, he threatened, you know, you. Would you, you know, this is a really also a difficult question too, I think. But, you know, if someone threatened your family and you had to kill them, would you then go tell your wife? It's like, well, yeah, I had to kill him because he threatened you guys. Or would you just make something up just to protect them from that horror that, you know, that, I mean, cause that would probably mess people up as well. Just knowing that, you know, someone was going to have me killed.
I wouldn't have held back as long as John did.
Yeah.
I there's no way. There's no way. I mean, he wouldn't have even had to be that blatant about what his intentions were. I would have look, I'm sorry. You're not my brother. I mean, this is not who my brother is. And I've got to do anything I can to stop this from happening.
Go ahead.
No, that was it.
I was just going to say, Lila had a really good line there because, you know, she's like, but he hasn't been your brother, not in the way that really matters. You know, when you look at it, Oliver's been his brother. You know, the team has been the siblings for John. They have been the family, and his real family haven't been around. And, you know, even when he was pretending, obviously, as we know now, to be reformed or whatever, he wasn't. It's so whatever connection John thought he had with Andy that died for them, you know, back in Afghanistan or shortly after.
Powerful episode with John. This was I think a John centric episode, and I think that made it a fun show for me to watch. Lots and lots of action. So
well, and then there was also this Oliver kind of was relegated to a second tier, but a very important part. He took his first steps into a larger universe. He went to the Dagobah Towers and Casino somewhere in Hub City, I guess. And I don't know. I understood and appreciate them giving John Constantine a mention at least. They put in this Ezrin Fortuna, which I Googled and I was like, okay, they could have used Zatanna, the Enchantress, any number of magical characters, Madame Xanadu, but they kind of created this new character, which I couldn't find any comic reference to this particular.
Do you think maybe some of those characters are out of bounds right now for them? They're not allowed to use them?
The Enchantress, definitely, because she's in the Suicide Squad movie. I don't know about any of the others. And I saw what they were kind of doing, and, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's kind of obvious, or it seemed like. But to me, Oliver is not really a magic user. I kind of resented the fact that they're trying to teach this to me, this character who is a very street level character. He's, you know, it's kind of like Hawkeye in the Avengers, right? He hangs around with gods and people with superpowers. But when it comes to the end of the day, he's just a man with a bow and an arrow. And it's like, how crazy is that, that he's in this fight? And now they're making it like, okay, I can channel the light inside of me to defeat the darkness. And it just didn't sit quite right with me.
I completely understand. I really, really do. I don't, anybody that feels that same way, and I'm sure there are some, I completely understand. For me again, and I don't know, man, I don't know if this week I was just in a decent mood watching it, or if I was just holding out any hope I possibly could for my computer to be okay. But I really enjoyed those aspects of this. I thought it made it kind of exciting. And I know I'm a big Green Arrow fan, and as you know, and I'm not, I know he's not a magic user or anything like that.
Right. It just didn't ring true to the nature of the character. And again, I understand, you know, what I know about the character from comics is not necessarily what they're portraying on the show. I understand.
Right, right. Yeah. So, but for me, I mean, it's just, maybe it was because it was very different than things that we have seen on this series so far as what Oliver has done. Maybe it was just something new and interesting, and there wasn't any interference from a Legends of Tomorrow crossover or an Oliver and Felicity love story or something. Maybe it was that. I have no idea. For some reason, I loved it. I really was excited when I was watching that. I enjoyed it tremendously. You know, I thought, and I'm still not sure of this, so you can verify this if you know, but I'm not sure if he was really using magic so much as just using the power within him to block it. Like, you know, Dark has the power to use death and darkness to channel it. But it was almost like she was teaching him how to just defend against it. And she took him in that room with the other, idol thing there, to maybe, give him a little jump start or a boost or make it clear exactly what she was doing. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my feelings about that. And again, people may not agree with that, and that's totally okay. But for whatever reason, it didn't bother me.
The training really lacked, as Felicity pointed out, training.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually would have liked to have seen a little bit more development in that. Maybe even just a little bit longer on the timeline or something.
Right. It's kind of like we spent enough time messing around with certain things. Like if we had introduced some of these aspects earlier, so that he could be working on them from week to week, I feel it would just grow the character so much better.
Yeah, I agree with that totally.
The one thing that didn't offend me, which actually kind of surprised me, is the fact that Elicity, you know, is kind of two sides of the same coin. You know, Oliver's got darkness, but he points out how Felicity is really his balance. And I'm like, wow, this is kind of a whole yin-yang thing they have going, which means that, you know, they've got to kind of – they complement each other in that aspect. Doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be together as a couple or anything, but the fact that Oliver is able to – And he starts out by saying that he was thinking about Felicity telling him all the good things about himself. But then he said he also heard Thea and John and Laurel. And it's like, that's awesome that he now kind of sees the pathway to this defense against the dark arts.
Yeah. I thought this episode boosted the ability of them to use Felicity as part of the team without, you know, things getting in the way of making them a couple. And I was very happy to see that it worked effectively, at least in my eyes, where Felicity could still be there, but they don't have to necessarily be together. And she's a valuable member there.
Right, right. Also, when we were seeing all of Oliver's flashbacks, there was one quick shot. I don't know if you caught it of, so we had seen, you know, the attacks on his family and Tommy and Deathstroke and Malcolm and Dark fighting him and stuff like this. And then there was one shot of Tiana with these yellow eyes. Like,
yeah,
they were, I don't know, they were sparkly magic eyes or something like that. So I'm wondering what happened slash will happen to her before the end of the season, because there was really no other flashback.
None this week. I can't even remember a time that there wasn't some flashbacks.
Right.
And I wouldn't even consider that a flashback. That was just one of his visions.
Right. But it was part of his vision, like, because he was remembering something from before. And, you know, her eyes were almost, well, they were glazed over in the way that Baron Ryder's eyes kind of turn milky white when he was using magic. But
right,
like I
except
said,
they
this,
were
something different. So
yeah, something they were yellow. So I have a feeling that is going to be her demise. That's how she's going to die, somehow by the magic, probably Ryder, or maybe even Dark. Maybe even Dark when he gets that idol or something. But not sure.
One other thing I wanted to point about Felicity. I'm surprised that the casino accepts sweaty boob money, because there are a lot of places that say, please no boob or sock money.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Well, this is a high class joint, so I'm assuming
it was underground too. So,
yeah. And there was quite a bit of money there. So, you know, at some point you just go, well, it's got a little sweat on it, but that's a lot of cash.
Yeah. And they did go to Hub City, which again is kind of interesting. There was talk of nexuses. Hub City, a hub being the center of, you know, like a wheel with spokes on it, but also, you know, the central point between light and dark. You know, the crossover point of all that. So I thought there was some, some interesting play with that, the name in all the other things they were talking about in this episode as well.
Yes. Yeah, very interesting. That hadn't occurred to me with the name.
And did you notice when Dark offs his the two middle managers that he did at the beginning of the episode, one was Phaedra Nixon. He kills her. She tries to run away, and he, like, whatever, magics behind her back, and she and falls to the ground. There is a computer operator sitting right next to her, doesn't even budge. So I think that person is probably getting a raise because she was very, very dedicated to the ideals of Hive.
They're working their way up in the Hive, you know, corporation. So that's one of the things they teach you, you know, from middle management. They teach you not to flinch when someone gets killed.
Yeah, I guess so.
I like how Dark says that Malcolm is underhanded.
Oh, yeah.
That was just mean.
I liked how he was, was dwelling on, bundt cake recipes?
Religion and bundt cake.
See, now, I there's sometimes when his jokes, like, kind of strike me as a little off, but I don't know. I thought that was kind of amusing when he was talking with his minions there.
Yes. So,
We got quite a few pieces of feedback this week. We're running a little long. So I just wanted to point out. So Josh had emailed, not you, but another Josh had emailed us about his thoughts about Laurel's death, which he said had zero emotional impact on him. And he also pointed out some of the coincidences. I think that we've mentioned where there's an Earth 2 Laurel that's going to be showing up on Flash shortly. So there's the potential, obviously, for Laurel to kind of come back in on that. He followed that up with so that was an email after last week's episode, and he followed that up with an email immediately after this week's episode, which he thought was one of the worst episodes of all. I mean, he was talking about bad writing and dialogue and with Dig and Lila and the Rubicon and the, you know, that it took Diggle too long to kill his brother. But he said the last 10 minutes were the part that he liked the most, kind of the stuff that you were just talking about, where he said Stephen Amell was the bright spot in the episode. The part where he shot Dark and repelled his powers was awesome. The more he's in costume, the better the show is, period. And we haven't gotten enough of that lately.
Well, I do agree with that. I don't agree with the being the worst episode of all, but I do agree with the not enough him in costume.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, overall, I'm frustrated with the show. I thought it was looking up after last week's episode, but I don't know. Anyway, I'm in it for the long haul, so I hope it gets better. Love your DC podcasts. So that's cool. And then Jeremy let us know. He gave us quite a enumerated list why he was not a fan of this episode. There was...
Of this week's or last week's?
This week's episode.
Oh, okay.
Thea, Malcolm, Diggle, Oliver. I mean, he had a number of the things that we spoke about here in the episode. He just had some problems with. He does go on to say, though, at the very end, he says, guys, thank you for doing your show. I couldn't do it. I really don't think I could handle having to talk about this season 20 plus times without it devolving into some stream of consciousness / psychotic rant. So kudos to you.
Well, hey, first of all, Jeremy, thank you for your thoughts. And that's I feel some of that frustration there. But I don't know. I have fun talking with you about it. Even on some of the not as much fun episodes, when we get to talk about it, it makes it a little bit better.
We do not devolve into psychotic rants, but. This would be
not on air anyway.
Right. I mean, this would probably be the same kind of conversation, Josh, I'd be having with you if we weren't recording it. I mean, that we'd probably have some more name calling and maybe, sprinkle in a few curse words here and there. But, I feel like this is indicative of the way that I kind of look at shows, regardless of whether I'm, doing a podcast about them.
Mm-hmm.
Or that I try to, if I can put the energy into it, and obviously this does require energy. So, I totally appreciate Jeremy's a word. So that's very nice. Thank you. few references also this week, a couple that we've already covered. This was our second week this season that we had a Harry Potter reference on Flash as well as on Arrow, which I thought was just curious. I'm wondering if there's like a bet in the writer's room. It's like, hey, if we put a Harry Potter, like somebody does something and they lose a bet. So it's like, all right, you've got to put a Harry Potter reference in and then we'll copy you and put one in our show too. Or something.
You know what? They're just excited about the new films. They're just excited about the new spinoff films. That's all.
Okay. Whatever. I am not.
Really? Oh, I am.
I will probably see it, but you know, I don't know. I enjoyed the films. I like the books better. But that's a magical discussion for another podcast.
Yes, it is. That's different magic.
There was discussion of the magical mystery tour that Oliver was going on, which I thought was a great little Beatles shout out.
Good Beatles album.
Excellent Beatles album. Except for Blue Jay Way. I'm really not a big fan of that song.
Not like that one? Yeah, that's a little slow.
The Fern got referenced again. So
yeah.
If they can get a new Fern in, that would be great. Season 5 would be spruced up so amazingly if there was a Fern.
Well, my theory is the Fern is going to be the big bad guy in Season 5.
Ah.
That didn't even get a comment. That's good. That's okay. That's appropriate.
Okay. As Genesis was discussed, there was talk of Phil Collins, and because he was the drummer for the band Genesis. So
he said they'll never tour again.
Right. And Felicity ran into one of the bad guys at some point, and she said, wow, I haven't done that in a while. So if you guys don't remember, Felicity ran into Deathstroke's daughter with a van at the end of Season 2. So it really has been a while since she hit somebody with the car. So
now her insurance going up again.
Yes, exactly. No, it doesn't even leave a dent. I mean, like, you hit a deer and it like crumples your fender and stuff, and she hits somebody with the front of the van and it looked pretty good. So,
oh, look, it's reinforced superhero car. This is why superheroes have their own, you know, cars and mobiles. So
they probably reinforce have a different premium too, I would think, being superheroes.
I hope so.
Just one final thing I wanted to point out too is when John went out for diapers, for some reason I was reminded of Raising Arizona, where Nick Cage has to go out and buy some diapers for his baby. And all the craziness that happens, because John kind of then got sidetracked and he really never brought the diapers back. But then later we've got a baby riding on a motorcycle with somebody, and I'm like, oh my God, they are really doing a little tribute to Raising Arizona here. But maybe
I've not seen that movie forever. Good movie.
Yeah, excellent, excellent movie if you guys like the Coen brothers and just some bizarre humor stuff. So, well, Josh, I'm glad we got to talk about this episode. There was you seemed a little more positive about it. Like I said, you stayed a little more in the light for this. I may have gone a little bit towards the dark, but I think we complement each other very well. And you know, my yin to your yang. No, that's
all right.
That's weird. That just sounds
weird. That is weird. Okay. Don't worry about my yang there. That's all good.
Anyway, so I appreciate you sticking around with me, and I'm glad we had a good talk on this week's episode of Green Justice.
I did, and I'm looking very much forward to next week. We'll see what it brings. And if you guys enjoyed us talking about this and agreed with at least one of us, hey, why don't you leave us some feedback on iTunes. We would love to see some great reviews up there. Also, you can contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or on Twitter @greenjusticepod, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
I guess if you agree with both of us, you might be bipolar and should probably get that checked.
Yeah. Yeah. There's these little vitamins you can take.
Oh,
you can get them in Star City.
Yummy. You can also check out the other podcasts Josh and I host, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, all via randomchatter.com. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends. Heck, feel free to let us know what you're enjoying, what you're not enjoying. We're happy to, you know, share. We keep getting emails from people saying, and they say, I'm so sorry for the long email. It's like, I'm glad we were able to elicit, you know, that much of a response from you. So I think
wonderful.
That's great.
We want to hear everything you have to say.
We do. We do appreciate hearing from our listeners, and we try to respond to you or address it on our show, you know, and where we can. So, and just remember, if you guys don't keep listening, you have failed the city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.